We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
93rd hour, Tiki and Tierney. What's happening? How are you today? A lot of golf, little hoops. Good stuff. Coming live from the Quicken Loans studio. National mortgage lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. You know, I didn't realize, I was out to dinner with a bunch of buddies on Saturday night. One of our friends moved away, and they came back, so I think it was eight or nine of dads, you know, I mean buddies, but all part of the whole group with the moms and the dads and the kids, like 40 of us. Huge posse. Can you use that word? I'm kidding. Santa's, I don't know that. And we're at dinner, right? And I'm in the middle of another conversation, and I kind of hear out of my other ear a few of my buddies talking about Uber and how Uber actually rates you. And I never knew this. I mean, I use Uber all the time. Probably not as much as others because I drive into the city. So I say all the time, but I mean, maybe not. I use it somewhat frequently. I use it more when I'm on vacation, when I'm out of town, whatever. I drive to work. I drive home. Janet and I will take it, you know, if we have a babysitter or go to dinner or something, you know, here and there. But what do they rate you on? Like, do they rate you on how you act? Are they like,
there's a variety of things. It's are you late to showing up? Are you drunk? Are you causing
a
mess? Well, like if you're like drunk and like causing a scene and loud and like hitting things, like are you yelling? Are you mean to the driver? Especially like if the driver takes a bad route, you can. There's multiple ways you can approach that. You can either yell at the driver
or you can just
be like, hey, you know, this route would have been better.
Sure, that's just common decency.
There's a lot of different things. People will bring food into their Ubers every now and again, spill food all over the place.
Yeah, that's true.
I've seen Uber drivers cleaning, like, vomit after, like, a late night of drinking and whatever in their car. There's a lot of things.
What's your rating? Do you know?
I'll find out right
Mine's
now.
Mine's low. Then I found out that they actually throw down ratings. I'm like, well, let me see what I am. And I'm like, God, it's good. I guess it's on a scale of 1 to 5. Or 5 is the best. I think it's 1 to 5. And I'm like, oh, I'm great. I'm platinum here. It's like I'm thinking I'm going to get, you know, some free rides down the road. I'm such a great driver. It's terrible. It's barely in the 4s. It's like 4.3. It's terrible.
4.3, that's a good 40 time.
Yeah.
I'm a 4.63.
Yeah, I think I was a 4.36. You know what it was, though? Admittedly, I think it took me a week or two to really learn how to navigate the app. So a couple times I would order a car, and then I think I may not have fully canceled it.
Canceling it will be the biggest hindrance to your rating.
Yeah, I've canceled a few. What's your rating there, D-Cell?
I'll look it up right now.
Yeah. But you knew that you got one? Really? Didn't know that. All right, so we got some NBA news here. Let's put on the old glasses, see what Woj dropped here. The Oklahoma City Thunder have agreed to trade Carmelo Anthony and a protected 2022 first-round pick to the Hawks for point guard Dennis Schroeder and Mike Muscala. League sources tell ESPN, once Anthony is part of the trade, he will be waived, making him a free agent. Rockets are the front-runner to land him. Let's see. The 2022 picks protected 1 through 14 becomes 2 second-round picks if not conveyed in 1 year. I tell you the truth. I mean, you have to love this for the I think you have to really love this for the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, Schroeder's got some serious money on the table, right? He's got at least 2-3 years to go. Let me see. So 2018-19, yeah, this year he's due 15.5. Next year he's due 15.5. And 2021 he's due 15.5. So that's gone. That's because they get rid of 45 there. They'll take on Carmelo. They'll dump him. They'll be out from beneath that. Yeah, I mean, that's a smart move. Just possibly get a pick out of it. It's a good move.
It's brilliant for the Thunder.
It.
I mean, everyone just thought they were going to cut Melo.
You think it's brilliant for the Thunder?
Brilliant for the Thunder.
Well, that's
if
you think
they saved themselves $100 million in luxury tax.
No, but I'm talking about I think fair. There's the economic aspect, which quite frankly, I don't really care. It's not my money. I think about, does it really propel them to a new height? Like, does Schroeder make them Are they better than the Rockets?
No, but I think the expectation, once we heard that they were going to part ways with Melo,
yeah.
What team was going to trade for him? We knew the Rockets didn't have the money to trade for him. The Lakers probably weren't going to trade any assets for him.
Yeah.
So nobody really expected. Really, all they're doing is trading them to Atlanta so Atlanta can cut him rather than them cut him. So they got pieces back for Melo while also saving $100 million in luxury tax. And Schroeder's not a great player, but he's certainly a sufficient role player off the bench, maybe like alongside Westbrook. Doesn't make them significantly better, but the fact that they got anything back for Melo in this case when everyone knew that they were going to cut him, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I just think they kind of do the same thing, Schroeder and Westbrook. I mean, you're going to have somebody play off the ball? I mean,
well, you have him come off the bench at the end of the...
I was going to say, you have Schroeder. He's a little bit too good to come off the bench. He's probably too good to come off the bench, and he's probably not good enough to be a vital cog at a team that's trying to win a championship. He's kind of in that...
They can turn around and nebulous. Flip Schroeder for somebody else, too. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess. This stuff with Kawhi Leonard, now it seems like the Raptors... I'm going to get back to Kawhi here. The Raptors have had some talks with Kawhi, seemingly starting to thaw out that resentment on the part of Kawhi. But now it seems like Kawhi Leonard's interested in going to Brooklyn as well. Nets are going to have a lot of money next season. Let's see here. In the initial aftermath, reports came out indicating that neither of the star players involved were thrilled about the deal. And in fact, Leonard had no interest in playing for the Raptors. However, it seems that Leonard has softened that stance a bit. According to a report from Bruce Arthur, the Raptors have had, quote, positive talks with Leonard's camp, and the star shown no indication that he will hold out via the Toronto Star. And then this came about Kawhi Leonard. Here's something else from a podcast, back-to-back podcast. And this came down on Wednesday. And this is a quote from the podcast. One thing that I was told last night is that this is interesting. One thing I was told about last night is that Kawhi Leonard's already been planning out his free agency for next season. And he's already been in contact with other stars in the league saying, hey, where might you want to play with me? What are we looking at? This is, again, from Arthur, per Anthony Irwin of Silver Screen and Roll. And it wasn't just the L.A. he was talking about. Brooklyn may be somewhere that he's going to have some interest to as well. It's got a lot of cap space, et cetera. That's a possibility. I mean, I guess the one thing that I'd be reluctant to do, let's just push this into next summer, all right? Do I think that, let me take this little couple steps before that. Do I think that Kawhi Leonard would sit out next season for the Raptors? No chance. Zero. Because first of all, if he feigned injury and, you know, hey, listen, I'm just not right. Same issue that plagued me with the Spurs. I can't go. I don't know what to tell you. Can't play. There's actually a really good article on this on CBSSports.com. I would encourage, Mike, maybe you can tweet this out. You can find this. I read it this morning. It lays out all the possibilities. It's very, very well written, very intelligent, very important to know what his real options are and what's not real or what's not plausible. So if he did that and the Raptors don't believe him, now you talk about acrimony. You don't really want to have to get to this step, but they could then enlist a neutral doctor who would then administer an exam. And I mean, it's kind of like you're talking contracts. You get an arbitrator in there, and the neutral doctor either deems him healthy or unhealthy and sides with either the player or the Raptors. So that would be messy. I don't think it would get to that point. The other thing, too, is if he sits out and say if he sits out and the Raptors don't want to take that route and don't want to enlist a neutral doctor, but he still decides to sit out. You know, there's a real good chance that he forfeits that year. There's some bylaws in the NBA free agency that you really have to pay attention to, some small print that could be really important to Kawhi Leonard. If he sits out next year and he's healthy, he might not be a free agent. I mean, there are things that can absolutely trigger that. So he's playing. He's absolutely going to play next season. But now let's kick this into the summer. So let's play. Let's say that he plays 70, because even before the quad, he had a checkered medical pass. Let's say he plays 67 games next year for the Raptors. That's a fair number. Probably right around this average, right? Right in the neighborhood. Let's say he plays 67. As per this podcast and the transcription of it, I want to know what play, like, if you're a free agent and you are trying to establish a super team and Kawhi Leonard calls you, do you really believe anything that Kawhi Leonard says? I mean, think about it. The guys that he won a championship with in San Antonio, didn't even believe him. You're going to take a leap of faith? Yeah, maybe you know him in passing, the All-Star game. Maybe you played against him in college. Maybe you know him from the AAU circuit. Maybe whatever. I mean, maybe you have the same agent, but you don't really know him day-to-day. The people who know him day-to-day, well, they took the high road, and that was pretty cool, Pop, and the you know, how they commended him on the way out, even though you know he was grinding his teeth when he did it. I'd be very reluctant to look at Kawhi Leonard, number one, because of his checkered physical past, but also just how strange he's been, how weird his whole situation's been. I don't know if I'd marry myself to that guy. I don't know. Now, if he plays 79 games and he's first-team All-NBA defense and he's putting up 22-7-8 and he gets the Raptors to the finals or whatever, maybe I might have to look at that again, revisit that mindset. But he is a strange cat. Nobody knows Kawhi Leonard. Nobody. Pop doesn't have a good sense, didn't at the end. His teammates, he's a real, I don't want to keep using the word strange because it seems like such a personal dig, but he's
withdrawn, maybe?
A what?
Withdrawn?
Yeah, well, that's yeah, that's
maybe something
fits.
Like that. I mean, remember that cut from David Robinson when you were talking about how he's only had 4 or 5 words from Kawhi?
That's strange.
Over 5 years knowing him?
I keep saying strange. I can't help it. I'm not even trying to, and I keep going back to strange.
Yeah, like where LeBron is like the drama king or the drama whatever, it feels like Kawhi just kind of like, I don't know, he just feels like he's not part of the, I don't know, there's something, I don't know what's strange, but there's something there that would definitely make me upset. Now, I don't know how he gets along with his teammates.
How about different?
Different.
Different, because different doesn't
imply.
Different's
not necessarily bad, it's just a matter of whether or not he gets along with his teammates. And when you hear some of the stuff that Tony Parker was saying,
yeah.
I mean, maybe although, those guys didn't really appreciate him.
Yeah, see, I certainly think that, but the fact that Tony Parker's now in a different city, does that kind of marginalize or mitigate some of the points that he made? What he was saying about, like, if he truly was the mouthpiece for Pop, and I think on some levels he was, but if the way he kind of comported himself, talking about Tony Parker, not Kawhi, at the end of his Spurs tenure, you don't think they throw him a bone on a 1-year extension? You don't think so? I mean, for a guy that's won multiple championships and has been there since the age of 19? So maybe the problem was partially Kawhi and also partially Tony Parker. I don't know. You know, I really don't know. I can't imagine Pop's there too much longer, right? I don't think he's going to be there a lot longer. Although I am interested to see what he turns DeMar DeRozan into. You know, I want to see DeMar DeRozan the first week of the season. I want to just, I'd love to see him 40 games in. I don't know how much different he can be, and I said this yesterday, because he's 29. He's kind of built into who he is. It's tough to change.
It's almost sad, though, to see. I mean, we see the fall from grace with Phil Jackson. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe the greatest coach, if not him, it's Pop, of our timeline, of our generation. You see the grace,
grace. We don't count Pat Riley of our generation?
Yeah, but Pat Riley, I think of more of like 80s. Now he's more of an executive. Kind of like Larry Bird's been more of an executive.
Yep.
I think of like our time from like 90s.
I got you.
Riley's more 80s.
Well, Riley was 90s with the Knicks and the Heat.
I mean, 2000s. Yeah, that's true.
But
we can throw Riley in there as well. But the fall from grace for Pat Riley, and it kind of feels like Popovich, there's been kind of like a negative. I mean, the Spurs have been struggling a little bit. Now he has this thing with Kawhi, gets rid of Parker. It just seems like he's kind of, when he goes the next couple years, it's going to be almost like on a downward slope. It almost seems sad that like these two great legendary coaches kind of have a negativity towards the end of their careers.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't use the word negative with Pop. I would use the word realistic. I mean, it's remarkable what he's done. Now, he was dealt basically pocket aces in the sense that, you know, you have two low maintenance, high character, transcendent stars in David Robinson and Tim Duncan. Boom. You know, not to mention guys like Sean Elliott and Avery Johnson who went on to coach. I mean, and just the grinders. I mean, Ginobili, who just plays his behind off. He's like a pit bull. Now, part of that is the culture, you know, that they demand and that they certainly built from when Pop was there, even when he was in the front office. But the tricky thing about like a coach and his downward descent versus a player and their downward descent is as a coach, there's really nothing you can do about it. You know, as a player, you get old, you lose a little burst. You know, maybe you add a turnaround jump shot like Kobe did. You stop trying to fly over people, and you just kind of beat them with your mind a little bit. If you're the head coach and your roster, through attrition or otherwise, through bad relationships, whatever it might be, once it starts to go, you know, I don't really know what you can do. You probably just got to ride out the storm and determine at that age, and, you know, his wife has passed on, sadly, does he want to go through the grind again and attack this into his late 60s and early 70s? And I can't answer that. I wouldn't even try to. All right, coming up next, some interesting comments. And we got into the surface of this yesterday. Fedora from UNC really walking a delicate line. Quite frankly, one that I don't think he's even equipped to walk. Not even to attempt to walk. And then there's other stuff with North Carolina football. And we'll stick around for this. I think you'll enjoy it. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Hey, everybody, quick way to save money, switch to Geico. Whether it's homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, get it all, geico.com. Hey, if you're a big baseball fan, make sure you go check out my interview with Joe Morgan earlier today. It was great. Joe's got an incredible project coming out about two Little League teams from 1955, and there's some Cal Ripken's in it. Ripken is in it for sure. Let me see. Hank Aaron's in it. Thank you, Mike. And Davey Johnson, former skipper, of course. Hank Aaron, Ripken, Gary Sheffield. This seems like a really cool project. This is the summary, and I want to get to Fedora from North Carolina, head coach Larry Fedora. Back in 1955, when racial segregation defined the South, two groups of 12-year-old boys stepped onto a baseball field in a nonviolent act of cultural defiance that would change the course of history and challenge their own perception 60 years later. Yeah, and they relive it as grown men, obviously, having gone through that. It's crazy because Joe, I mean, talk about paralleling his life. He was 12 in 1955, the same age of the two teams. But Joe, like me, you know, Joe's from the East Bay out in California, Oakland. Very diverse. And, you know, it's just whether it was black, white, Asian, he grew up playing with everybody. And, you know, I've talked a lot on this show. One of the favorite teams, outside of my school teams, that's just rarefied air. But my favorite non-school team of all time was my AAU team, where I was one of three white kids on the team playing baseball up in Spanish Harlem. It was awesome. So, you know, I had that mindset growing up, and obviously Joe had his growing up in the East Bay. But, you know, especially in the mid-50s, certain parts down south, a lot of parts of this country, there was just not a tolerance for that. And this seems like a great project. It really, really does. I mean, this is with Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier here. It all ties in. So go check that out. Mike, what's the best spot for people to get it? Just go to get it on YouTube. Go to tikiandtierney.com. All the great outlets, right?
Radio.com as well. If you go to youtube.com/CBS Sports, you can find all the videos and you'll see a lot of information there.
It was awesome. And one thing that I brought up to Joe, actually two things that jumped out. One of which, I believe that the 1970s, and he was a part of this obviously, with the Big Red Machine when he won back-to-back MVPs, they won the World Series 75-76. 76, they swept the Yankees. 75, they beat Boston. That was Carlton Fisk going like this, waving it fair. And you know, that decade's amazing because go do some research. If you're a younger baseball fan, do the research. If you're an older baseball fan, just nod in agreement because I think you'll probably think that I'm right. Think about the way the decade started with the A's with three championships, right? Rollie Fingers, Joe Rudy, Reggie, Catfish. I mean, that was Sal Bando. Incredible. And then that morphed into the Big Red Machine. With a couple of championships, although they lost to the A's in the World Series earlier that decade. Then the Yankees went back-to-back with Munson and Randolph and Guidry and Goose, just Sweet Lou, I mean, Nettles, Bucky Dent, incredible team. And then you know, you had the Dodgers kind of beginning at the eight. You know, they beat the Dodgers beat the Yankees in 81, and then the Dodgers with Garvey and Ron Say and those guys. You know, Davey Lopes, Bill Russell, the great pitchers, Kenny Landreau in center field. Remember him? 70s are unique in the sense that I think they had the most dynasties in the history of baseball is what I'm saying. And Joe and I talked about that. I think you really enjoyed the interview. All right, UNC's Larry Fedora. How about this guy? This guy, he's interesting, isn't he? If interesting is code for out of his mind. First of all, and we don't have this particular quote. We're going to play two for you. We don't have the one with CTE, right? Oh, you got it. Good job. Listen to what he says. Now, I tried to find if he studied science or if he double majored in medicine or biology. It was something that would actually give him the license to expound on this more than you or I. I didn't find anything. Maybe there's something there. I don't know. But listen to what he says about concussions and CTE. This is out there. Check this out. All right. Kind of walked it back a little bit. He's going down that line, probably caught himself. I just think that's an irresponsible position for a coach to take. I get it. There's a responsibility. There's a personal investment to grow the sport, to see the sport continue to flourish. Listen, I love nothing more on Saturdays when I'm sitting there on my couch getting ready for Tops on Sunday. Season 6 coming up, by the way, this year on CBS Sports Network. I can't wait. Shine, Fletch, great Amy Trask. Getting my notes ready for the show, watching the SEC on CBS. I mean, it's just, there's nothing, it's amazing. I love it. I don't want it to go anywhere, but you got to be real. I mean, to distance CTE from concussions in football, I thought that was a little sloppy, although he did try to walk it back. So now Mikey goes on, and he tries to correlate, in essence, the toughness, right, that football instills in young men and how that actually correlates to the toughness of our country, if I have that right. Okay, here's Fedora. I mean, I'd love to co-sign that because, you know, at my core, I'm somewhat aggressive. I can appreciate him saying that. But, Ack, what was the first year of the NFL? I mean, roughly. Baseball's been around forever.
You know, it's a good question.
I mean, there were world wars long before the NFL was born. Yeah, we did all right. Most of them did all right. Listen, two really good buddies from high school and another guy who I have great respect for, but I didn't really hang around with too much. This is obviously a million years ago. All three went to West Point, all right? All three did JROTC at Xavier High School in Lower Manhattan, 30 West 16th Street. Great school, Jesuit. Love it. Reference it all the time. And not one of those guys played varsity football. Matter of fact, one guy swam. My buddy John, who I'm still really close with, don't get to see him much, unfortunately, but always, you know, talk to him on Facebook and always keep connection with him. Great guy. He played varsity baseball. Actually, he watched. He did the scorebook. He was on the team because he was he played so hard in practice. You're like, we can't cut this guy. There's no way. I mean, he'll run through a wall. He's on the team. He's not going to play much because we were pretty good, but he certainly had a uniform, played varsity baseball. And the other guy, Joe, who we always joke around, could be president. He's Italian. We kid around with like, Joe, you lose the vowel, you could be president. Because the kid's, he's literally done nothing wrong in his life. Like, he's never smoked pot. He's done nothing wrong. I don't care how far you take.
Just like me.
Yeah.
Done nothing wrong in my life.
Santa for president. I mean, but my guy legitimately has done nothing wrong. And he played 1 year at JV. That's it. Three of the strongest, mentally toughest, most, you know, fiercely competitive and proud Americans this is not hyperbole, that I truly know. Not one of those guys played football. So, I mean, I'm not saying, listen, if you give me the option of going to battle, going to war, I don't know, getting into a barroom fight, whatever, anything physical, and I'm given the choice of, you know, 10 guys who played football or 10 guys who were in the choir, I'm going to take the 10 guys who played football, clearly. But to make that direct connection, that just seems like a reach for me. I'm sorry about that. 855-212-4227. Tinky and Tierney Show. Get some calls coming up. Whether it's Tiger Woods, whether it's Mello and the trade, whether it's the Joe Morgan spot. We've got the blast coming up. We'll get the calls, as I said. Axe update. Rich, coming at you right now. How about this story? Wow. This story is incredible. Listen to this. Welcome back to Tiki and Tierney, by the way. This is crazy. This dropped. I just saw this on the AP during the break. You guys aren't going to believe this. AP news break. Dolphins anthem punishment from within includes suspensions. Wow, that's going to make for an unhappy team. That is going to be bad for chemistry. Let's see. Dolphins players who protest on the field during the national anthem could be suspended for up to 4 games. 4 games under a team policy issued this week. Wow. The proper anthem conduct section is just one sentence in a 9-page discipline document provided to the AP by a person familiar with the policy who insisted on anonymity because the document is not public. It classifies anthem protest under a large list of, quote, conduct detrimental to the team, all of which could lead to a paid or unpaid suspension, a fine, or both. Miami's anthem policy comes after the NFL decided in May the teams would be fined if players didn't stand. We know about this. We also know the league left it up to the teams on how to punish players. And right now, none of the teams have actually made their policies public, so we don't really know. You know, the Jets came out and said they wouldn't fine players. A couple of teams have done that, but we don't know what the actual punishment would be for those teams inclined to levy a punishment for those who don't stand for the anthem. This is not going to end well for Miami. And you know whose job this complicates tremendously? Adam Gase. I mean, this is not good. For a team that's trying to find out if Ryan Tannehill's finally the guy, for a team that's, you know, trying to get off this treadmill of really going nowhere important, I mean, it's a pivotal year. Pivotal year for their quarterback. It's a huge year for their head coach. They got decisions to make. They lost Landry. He went to the Browns. We know that. So now you're going to have a team. And, you know, Mike, how Miami, here's the problem. Furthermore, Miami was pretty in sync with each other. They had more than a few guys that protested the anthem, if I recall. Right? Kenny Stills. I can visually see at least 3, maybe 4 Dolphins.
Michael Thomas was one of them.
Yep. There was a few.
Yeah, there was definitely a couple of them. There was a few. Them.
Maybe Landry was one. I'm not sure if Jarvis was, but... And he's not there.
Julius Thomas was there. Kenny Stills was very vocal and very out there for sure.
So now, I mean, it's one thing to say, all right, you want to hit me with a fine, whether it's $1,500 or $10,000 or $15,000, whatever it might be. That's a decision that, you know, each player is going to have to make with, if you know, if he's married, he's going to have to talk to his wife about that. There's finances. They're not guaranteed deals. And, I mean, it's real life stuff. You're not just going to hand over $25,000 a week just... Some people, just to make a point. Others will, and you got to respect that. But now, I mean, can you imagine if the Dolphins... Listen, this is to dissuade them from doing anything, but there's always one cavalier voice out there. There's always somebody willing to challenge authority, especially on something that is this meaningful to players. This is gonna melt.
And the really interesting thing to me, and Tiki has talked about this a lot because he knows Stephen Ross, the owner... decently from doing some stuff with him in the past, and Stephen Ross has this great initiative, Rise.
Yeah.
The Ross Initiative in Sports for Equality, and he's teamed up with a lot of different minorities and a lot of different groups within communities around Miami, all over the country, in different various fashions with police and authoritative figures as well.
Yeah, he's been very proactive, no Super, question.
So this is surprising, and we actually have one of our listeners, one of our followers, his name is Antoine Staley. He's mm-hmm. actually a beat writer out in Miami for the Dolphins. And we've been going back and forth a little bit over the past few minutes. And he says it appears this might be more of an Adam Gase policy as opposed to a Stephen Ross policy.
That's even worse. But even to your point, if it's an Adam Gase thing, and we need clarification on that, and I'm sure you know he's piped in, he's probably right, but Stephen Ross is still allowing him to do that. Stephen Ross pays Adam Gase to coach the team. If Adam Gase is doing something that Steve Ross doesn't want him to do, then Adam Gase ain't going to do it. Unless Stephen Ross doesn't step in and intervene and doesn't say, hey, no, not good for business, not happening.
Well, this is the tweet from Staley that just came out.
Let me make a prediction right now. Yeah, yeah. This is the end of Adam Gase will not be coaching the Dolphins next season. Period.
You mean 2018 or 2019?
No, 2019. He'll start the season. It won't go well. There'll be... anarchy from within. They will be a mess. They're not really even that good to begin with. I mean, they're okay. They're somewhat competitive for sure. They're not a 3-win team. They're not a 12-win team. They're a team that needs to play cohesive, smart, passionate football to give themselves a chance to be a wild card team. They're not going to beat the Pats in the division yet. Nobody is. This is the end of the road for Gase. For him, if this is true, for him to implement this rule, he just lost the locker room. That's it. He's done. It's over.
And I agree with you about the Stephen Ross thing. Here's what Staley said, both publicly and to me. He said, for Dolphin fans taking shots at Stephen Ross, hold on a minute. It was Adam Gase that implemented a policy last year that required players to stand or remain in the locker room. Some players complained, and then Gase allowed players to kneel. So it sounds like it's Gase, but again, the owner is the owner. He has the final say. So if he stands up and says, hey, Adam, this is not happening.
100%. Well, just like the Jets thing. If, you know, Todd Bowles said, I'm going to find the players who, which he wouldn't, and he didn't, but if he did, I'm going to find the players who don't recognize the national anthem. We can't have this on the team. And then, you know, Chris Johnson, who's obviously taking over for Woody, you know, Woody says, no, this is my brother's team, and by extension, it's now my team based on his current job. I own it. You don't. I tell you what to do, and that's not going to fly. You're not going to penalize anybody monetarily. Get lost. Just squash his fine. And I don't know. Maybe Ross is going to eventually get around to this. But I would have to think before, you know, for them to put this to paper and implement this in a 9-page policy, unless their PR team is completely immune to any or devoid of any common sense or any judgment. They had to discuss this on deep levels. Understanding the consequences would be pretty far-ranging. And if not, that's a completely different story. Then they're really inept. I would think that this was discussed, and on some level, Stephen Ross signed off on this already. This is not going to catch him by surprise.
Totally agree. And right? This doesn't apply just to players. It applies to anybody on the Dolphins staff. Wow. So, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, a coach or an equipment manager, but, like, let's say you're doing something disrespectful during the anthem and it's caught on camera, caught on film, whether you're laughing or joking. I mean, now are players or employees for the company, are they now subject to this where they can get fired or fined or suspended for something that's caught on camera where they're not fully respecting the flag too? I mean, this is wide ranging. This goes well beyond just players kneeling. This is an interesting conversation that's going to make things messier before it gets cleaner.
Oh, we'll definitely have a good guest on this tomorrow. It just happened too late in the show. It's basically 12 minutes left in the show. Otherwise, we will attack this with vigor tomorrow for sure. Now, I'm trying to think about this from every single level, obviously, and I just gave you the most important thing that I see. But the fact that you can, if you want to protest by staying in the locker room, is that a way for players to circumvent? I'm talking about the Dolphins specifically. Or is this just now an act of defiance? Like, you have now told me that if I do this, you're going to suspend me for up to a month? Well, now I'm not going to stay in the tunnel or in the locker room. Now I'm coming out, whereas I otherwise may have protested quietly out of the view of the cameras. This is a disaster. This is going to be a mess. It's not going to go well for them. Wow. All right, Mike is in Texas, and Mike is on Tiki and Tierney. Mike, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
My guys, how we doing today, boys?
What up, Mike? How you doing today, buddy?
I am doing well. I'm a little perplexed right now because I thought people were rewarded for accomplishments, not theory. I literally am baffled. You guys know me, all about basketball. I know my stuff. I think Carmelo just won the title of greatest waste of talent ever. This guy.
Oh, that's a little hyperbolic, but okay, go ahead.
Well, and it's a little biased too, because when that guy got drafted, I was expecting great, great things. Dude's a great scorer, great jump shooter. He could have been so much more. Like, you have to understand your role, Carmelo.
Yeah.
You are 15, 16, however many years into this league, and what have you done besides demand large amounts of money for zero conference titles, zero finals appearances? What is the deal? And I get it. I like him as a person.
Yeah.
I really do. He's a good guy.
I think so too.
And I don't think he's necessarily a terrible NBA personality. It's just that he refuses to just accept reality. Dude, you know why you're not in L.A. with the Lakers right now? Because LeBron is too smart for that. LeBron has stuff he wants to do other than make a bunch of money, other than shoot a bunch of jump shots, other than be on a team that should be in the finals, a.k.a. the Thunder last year, and instead get knocked out of the first round by a rookie. The guy, I don't even know. I don't know what to do, guys. He's not necessarily
here's the thing,
a cancer.
Mike, it's funny. I was doing a Q&A on Twitter last night. Thanks for the call, buddy. And yeah, I got asked a multitude of questions. And I'll do it, you know, once every couple of weeks just to kind of touch the fans, touch the audience differently. I enjoy it. You know, a little downtime. I'll carve out an hour and I'll answer some questions. And one of the questions that I was asked was the most overrated athlete of all time. And my answer was actually Carmelo Anthony, which is different, by the way, from how you framed it. And I think, I want to make sure I have your words. I think you call him the greatest waste of talent of all time. See, to me, a waste of talent is a guy who, you know, is given every gift. He's a prodigious talent. And he blows it away. He sniffs it away up his nose. Or he drinks it away. Or, you know, he's involved in, you know, off the court domestic issues and assault and battery. And he just has a rap sheet so long, nobody wants to employ him. And, you know, there was the draft, the 86 draft. There was a lot of, like, Roy Tarpley and William Bedford and that class. Those guys, they were wastes of talent because they literally succumbed to demons and drugs and alcohol, and that became first and foremost rather than their craft. That's not the – I mean, that's so unfair to position it like that with Carmelo. That's not the case at all. The way I interpret that question when I was asked it last night, most overrated player of all time – I want to find somebody who is consistently thrust into the conversation with the greats, certainly of his generation, when he really hasn't deserved it. I mean, and you ran through no NBA finals, you know, no Western Conference championships. I mean, come on, man. I mean, you know, in the NBA, I reference Ernie Banks a lot. You know, baseball, one guy, Nolan Ryan, played on some really bad teams because it's, you know, there's only so much you could do. Steve Carlton, back in 72, this is a great stat for you. D-Cell, you'll like this. In 1972, Steve Carlton won 27 games for the Phillies. They won 59 as a team, 58 as a team. Certainly fewer than 60. He won 27. They were terrible. Guy had the nastiest slider in the game. He was great. I mean, he's incredible. So, but basketball, if you're not challenging the bottom line, in a game where the star handles the rock 45% of the time in terms of usage, I'm sorry, there's got to be a level of accomplishment next to the points. And I watched them every year in New York except one. They were terrible. They were a lottery team. They stunk. He was the best player on the team. I'm sorry if it's harsh, but to me, it's his fault. And he didn't get a whole lot of help. You know, coaches weren't great. They didn't make draft. I get it. Great draft picks. The other thing with Melo, too, is that he's just not a great athlete. And I do think he's a little limited. So when we criticize him for, you know, not being a great defender, I mean, not even an interested defender, let's call it for what it is. He's an inferior, incredibly deficient defender, and he really always has been. But he's not a blazer. You know, he was always, you know, not really above the rim, even when he was 23 or 24. He'd sneak down the occasional two-handed, you know, hammer hard. But he wasn't jumping over people and, you know, ripping it back and throwing it down on two people. This game was jab step, you know, pump fake, 20-footer, get to the stripe. He was strong. He would bang you around in the post. Not an uber athlete. And for the most part, if you look at, you know, guys from our generation, whether it's Kobe, uber athlete, LeBron James, uber athlete. I mean, most of the great players. Well, James Harden's not. Right now, he's not an uber athlete. He's a little more tricky, too. Timing, stuff like that. But yeah, Carmelo is a complex legacy. I mean, we could talk about Carmelo all the time, but we'll see where he winds up. Looks like it's going to be the Rockets. You know, we'll follow up that Dolphins conversation. Twitter's got to be ablaze. I can't wait to get off the air and check it out for a minute. That is not going to fly well. That is impending disaster. Book it. If that's Gase's rule, that may as well be called the shovel because he just dug his own grave. It's over for Gase in Miami. That's not going to work. Have a great Thursday. We will see you tomorrow. A lot of golf as well. Peace. Be well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.